From WBUR Boston, NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Rarely has there been so much anticipation and so many questions ahead of congressional hearings that could shake the White House. They begin today, and the big show is tomorrow when former FBI Director James Comey testifies. Among the questions, did President Trump ask Comey to drop the investigation into his former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn about his ties to Russia? If so, does that amount to obstruction of justice? This hour on Point, getting ready for James Comey. You can join us on air or online. What will you be watching for? What questions do you want James Comey to answer? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me now from Washington is Josh Meyer. He's senior investigative reporter for Politico. He's been covering James Comey for a long time and is following the Russia investigation closely. Josh Meyer, welcome back to On Point. So glad you could join us.
Thanks, Anthony.
Also joining us is Julie Bykowitz, a White House reporter for the Associated Press. She's also been following developments this week ahead of Thursday's hearing. Welcome back to On Point, Julie. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony.
And Julie, I'll start with you, and I just want to dispense with some news today. President Trump says he will nominate Christopher Wray, a former federal prosecutor, to lead the FBI, so he'd be succeeding James Comey, who President Trump fired. What do we know about Christopher Wray very quickly?
Well, this is a really neat timing on the nomination, and it answers a question that's been lingering in our minds, which is who is going to lead the FBI at this really important time? Christopher Wray is a very traditional choice in a sense. He led the Department of Justice Criminal Division under President Bush. He's been involved in some extremely high-profile investigations over the years, worked under James Comey at one point, and most recently was the attorney representing Governor Chris Christie in the Bridgegate scandal.
All right. Josh Meyer, do you want to add anything to that? Any surprise? What's your reaction to the selection of Christopher Wray?
Anthony, I've been following this pretty closely since the beginning, and I think there's a little bit of surprise here in Washington that given all of the people that they've interviewed, many of them high-profile people, that he picked Christopher Wray as quickly as he did. I believe that he just sort of came on the radar just a few days ago on the White House's radar. He is a good choice. I mean, I think he's fairly sort of low-key. He has, overseen some prominent investigations, including Enron. He was not the assistant attorney general for that long, just from 2003 to 2005. He's well-regarded among people. He's not considered extremely partisan one way or the other. I think he's a stable choice. I think there's some other people that were out there, too, that would have also been good choices. But we'll see.
All right. A stable and uncontroversial choice. Well, let's move on and talk about sort of this big show tomorrow when former FBI Director James Comey testifies before the Senate Intelligence Committee. There's also goings on today with some other big players testifying before Congress. Josh, can you run through the cast of characters who are testifying today?
The big news is that, Rod Rosenstein's testifying, talking about FISA and some other issues like that. So this is going to be a very high-profile hearing. There's going to be,
this is the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein.
Right. Yep. So, he's going to be testifying about intelligence gathering measures. Dan Coats, who's the Director of National Intelligence, is testifying. And so this is sort of seen as a prelude to tomorrow, even though it's technically unrelated. But they're going to be talking about a sort of a broader set of issues in terms of intelligence gathering, probably counter-espionage, leak investigations, a wide array of things.
All right. So the big show is tomorrow. FBI Director James Comey coming to testify, perhaps one of the most anticipated congressional hearings in many years. Let me sort of tick through a bunch of issues with both of you, Josh and Julie, about what are the big questions that are going to be asked. And let's start with that one that I mentioned in the intro. Did Trump asked Comey directly to drop the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and his ties to Russia. Julie, is that on top of your list?
Well, that's certainly a question that I think is on many, many lawmakers' minds as well as the public. And it's important to hear from Comey. This will be the first time that he's spoken out since his firing, which was last month. Feels like a little bit longer ago, but it's just last month. And so, you know, that's, of course, top of mind. And what's sort of interesting is to hear the sort of front burner questions that the Republican Party is pushing out ahead of this hearing. You know, one talking point that we've heard from the Republican National Committee is that, you know, following up on that question you just asked, they want to know, if there was a concern that Comey had, why didn't he act on it immediately? Why didn't he notify Congress? So you're starting to hear that sort of pushback on Comey from Republicans and from Trump allies. And I have no doubt that that type of questioning will be asked as well.
Really interesting. Josh, what's on top of your list? What are you most anxious to hear tomorrow?
Well, I can't wait for it. I think it's going to be a really historic event. You know, people are trying to put it in context historically, and I'm not really sure that you can. I think that even, you know, some of the Watergate hearings, some of the more memorable moments from those arose unexpectedly. You know, you had the Anita Hill testimony. But this is really, as somebody put it, Watergate on steroids or Watergate meets this or that. I mean, this is a really, really, you know, huge development. It remains to be seen exactly what Comey is going to talk about. But, you know, I'm waiting to hear what he's going to say about his meetings with Trump, whether he believes that it was obstruction of justice. You know, there's been reporting just over the last 24 hours about, you know, how he asked Attorney General Jeff Sessions that he to not let him be alone with President Trump in the room. So, you know, you're starting to hear sort of the broad outlines of what he's going to say, but nobody really knows for sure. And remember, there's also going to be a closed or classified session where he's also going to be talking to the Senate Intel Committee. And so that, I think, is where the real information is going to come out.
Right. I gather, and correct me if I have this wrong, but from the reading that I've been doing, I gather James Comey is prepared to be pretty open about the conversations that he had, private conversations that he had with Donald Trump. For instance, Did Comey really assure Trump three times that he was not under investigation? This is a claim that Donald Trump has made. My understanding is that Comey would probably like to clear that up. Does that sound right to you, Julie?
Absolutely. And if you think about it, so much of what's interesting about what Comey will have to say arose from statements that the president made publicly about what would have normally been private interactions with key members of his staff, including Comey. And so that really adds an interesting dynamic here. You have a lifelong lawman in James Comey who maybe would be somewhat reluctant or cautious about talking about his conversations with the president. But then on the other side, you know, if you have Trump having already put out one version of what happened, you wonder if Comey will feel the need to either stand up for himself or explain what it is that the president meant by that letter that he put out the day that Comey was fired. It just really adds an interesting dynamic to what Comey will have to say tomorrow.
Let's take a call right now. Let's go to David, who is calling from Nashville, Tennessee, with a question. David, you're on the air.
Hello, Anthony. I'll take my answer off the air. I have one question, and that is, if Comey is likely, as many people say, to deliver some kind of a bombshell that could be detrimental to the White House, why wouldn't the president invoke executive privilege and squash this thing right here and now?
David, it's a good question. We'll put that to our panel. Josh Meyer, why not? Why didn't the president? I know it was talked about invoking executive privilege, but the White House didn't do that.
You know, I think that there's a couple of reasons. One, I think that they are sort of aware of how bad that would look, the optics of trying to shut that down. But I also think that the real answer is that, you know, I've known Jim Comey for a long time, since before 9/11. I know Bob Mueller. I wrote a very long piece about him today and how he might manage this investigation based on his handling of the NFL investigation into domestic violence. And, you know, I am positive that that Comey has not sort of vetted what he's going to be saying with Mueller, who's now the special counsel, to make sure that it doesn't interfere with his investigation, especially the obstruction of justice part of it. So I don't think he's really going to be providing those details. I would be willing to bet that Comey is going to sort of describe the conversations with Trump and then say, I am not going to make a legal judgment on it. I will leave that to the experts. One thing that I would expect him to say, though, is that that he did not tell President Trump that he is not under investigation? Because I know that during an investigation, you know, law enforcement officials never do that. They never say one way or the other.
Mm. How much of this, you know, gets personal for James Comey? I mean, after all, President Trump fired him. He said he did a bad job. He called him a nut job to the Russians. I mean, now it's Comey's turn. We know that Comey has sort of established a reputation as a sort of cool and collected professional, but he has reason to make this personal. Julie, what do you think?
Well, I don't think that we'll see that. I don't think that we'll see the former FBI director get personal about the president. However, what's interesting is that some of Trump's allies are starting to get personal about Comey, following up on, you know, the president's own statements and interviews just after he dismissed Comey, where, you know, as you said, he was disparaging him as a nut job and a showboat. We already have one advertisement that's going to be on the air tomorrow that AP wrote about yesterday, describing again James Comey as a showboat and saying, you know, can we really trust what he says? Look at his previous congressional testimony. So the tactic from some of President Trump's allies is to, with the president not invoking executive privilege, instead go the route of questioning whether we can trust what we hear from Comey tomorrow.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. We're previewing James Comey's Senate testimony tomorrow before the Intelligence Committee, walking you through the major players and what's at stake. You can join the conversation. Do you think President Trump fired James Comey as part of a cover-up or because he was doing a bad job? Should Comey have spoken up earlier about his private conversations with the president? I'm joined by Josh Meyer from Washington. He's senior investigative reporter for Politico. Also with us is Julie Bykowitz, White House reporter for the Associated Press. And Josh, Julie, we were talking before the break about some Republican pushback trying to undermine Comey's credibility. So here's a spot from the Great America Alliance, a PAC affiliated with President Trump, which is running an attack ad going after James Comey ahead of tomorrow's hearing. Here's that. Here's a bit of that.
And after he testified before the U.S. Senate, Comey's own staff admitted some of his answers were flat out wrong. James Comey, just another D.C. insider, only in it for himself.
Republican efforts there to undermine James Comey. Here's Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins with a slightly different approach. She spoke on CBS's Face the Nation this past Sunday about what she wants to hear from James Comey tomorrow.
If the president said, look, I just fired the guy, I feel bad for him, what do you think's going to happen? That's one thing. If, on the other hand, the president said to Mr. Comey, I want you to end this investigation of General Flynn. I want it ended now. And if you don't do so, you're going to be in trouble. That is a whole different nature of a conversation. And that's why the tone, the exact words that were spoken, and the context are so important. And that's what we lack right now. And we can only get that by talking to those directly involved.
And one more piece of tape. This is from an interview with CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday. Democratic Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, described what he wants to hear tomorrow from Comey.
I want him to reinforce, one, the fact that the Russians directly intervened in our elections, which everybody accepts, except for the president and maybe Vladimir Putin. And two, I want to know what kind of pressure, appropriate, inappropriate, how many conversations he had with the president about this topic. Did some of these conversations take place even before the president was sworn in? And I think Jim Comey deserves to have his, in effect, day in court since the president has disparaged him so much.
Senator Mark Warren there of Virginia. Josh Meyer, I'll come to you on this, but lay out a little bit about what the different approaches we're going to hear from the Democrats on the committee versus the Republicans.
You know, as we've seen in recent hearings, the Democrats are going to focus on the underlying issues. You know, what did the Russians do? I mean, everybody in the intelligence community, you know, is clear on that they did meddle in the election, that they decided at some point to throw their support behind Trump as a candidate, mostly because they really despised Hillary Clinton and that they were worried that she had a foreign policy that was much more antithetical to their geopolitical interests. So they're going to be trying to get to the bottom of the underlying issues. And what you've seen from the Republicans, though, is that they've repeatedly been asking questions about leaks and other information. The Senate is better on that than the House. I mean, some of the House members basically refused to even acknowledge that there were underlying issues and just simply tried to figure out, you know, who was leaking information. But, I think that there's some good people on both sides of the aisle that will be asking some pertinent questions.
And Josh, as someone who's been covering James Comey for a while, remind us, our listeners, just what kind of a character he is when he's in this situation. I mean, he's pretty good on his feet and knows what he wants to say and can do it, I guess you could say, with in a way that knows how to grab the spotlight and with a flair for the dramatic.
Indeed, yes. I mean, I've known Jim since before 9/11 because I was covering terrorism back then. He's extremely bright. He's sort of an FBI agent from central casting in the sense that he takes very, very meticulous notes of every conversation afterwards. He's been doing that for years. But he is also able to convey, unlike some other people at the FBI who are sort of wooden, I would say. I mean, I think he's able to really tell a good story. If you remember his riveting testimony about the Wednesday night massacre when he and Bob Mueller raced up the stairs of the hospital to prevent Alberto Gonzalez from getting John Ashcroft to sign over new authorities in the NSA, wiretapping. So he'll be able to tell a very compelling tale, but he will also have a lot of detail. He'll have notes based from contemporaneous conversations. And remember, an FBI agent's notes about a conversation can be used in a criminal court of law as evidence. So they'll have a lot of weight here as well.
Right. And Julie, those notes, we learned that James Comey kept fairly detailed notes about his conversations with Donald Trump. Remind us which conversations in particular those notes pertain to, and no doubt senators will be asking about tomorrow.
Well, gosh, as you were playing those clips earlier, I was thinking to myself, we have so many different issues here, so many different buckets of investigations and lines of questioning. And so on one side, you've got Comey and what he is going to be questioned about with the underlying Russia investigation. You've also got Comey being questioned about, what the president said related to that particular investigation. You've also got Comey being questioned about what the president may have said related to General Flynn. And then, of course, the leaks. And I'm probably missing a few things there. So I guess it's good for Comey that he's a meticulous note taker, because there's so much going on that, it might be hard for viewers at home to keep it all straight. And it certainly requires you to jot down notes as you're going along and hearing what he has to say about all these various different topics that are, of course, related, but in some ways are discrete investigations of their own.
Sure. Let's take a couple of calls now and go to Byron, who's calling from Blanco, Texas. Byron, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me on. So the question, I think, on everybody's minds is this going to court? The stakes are that the president can be impeached, but people in his cabinet could go to jail. So asking the panel, what are the stakes? What are the chances? Or is anyone going to jail over this?
Well, it might be a little soon to know the answer to that, but Josh, Julie, respond to Byron. I mean, what could emerge tomorrow that actually could result in legal action? Or what are the chances? Josh, I'll start with you.
I spent a lot of time reporting this out, talking to legal experts, wrote a few stories about it. I don't want to make too many Watergate comparisons. Again, we need to sort of get the facts and figure out what happened. But an investigation into the underlying issues could take many, many months, probably a year or two. But an obstruction of justice investigation could move very quickly. If they find that there is reason to believe that that happened, they would move to secure the evidence, compel testimony from people, get the notes from the conversations. Trump himself has hinted that there are tape recordings. So that kind of stuff about an obstruction of justice investigation could move very quickly, and that could lead to criminal charges, irregardless of the broader issues underneath it. So I don't want to say it's always the conspiracy that gets you, but that could be what's happening. That could be one of the things that does eventually happen here.
Yeah, and Julie, what's in response to our caller? I mean, could Comey provide evidence that Trump obstructed justice and could start that whole ball rolling pretty quickly? What do you think?
Well, I doubt he would do so in the open setting tomorrow. What I think could happen is that he could remind people that there are these very serious issues out there. He could leave some tantalizing clues that we just have to trust that Bob Mueller is following up on and pursuing the investigation in that way. But I completely agree with Josh. I think that this, whether there's an obstruction of justice issue, will probably be the first thing that we start hearing more and more about on the investigative side, on the from what Mueller's probe gets into, because there is already so much out there. Again, a lot of it by the president himself, who's put out statements and tweets and interviews saying things and affirming that he told Comey certain things that, you know, you already have a big sort of basket of statements and evidence to look at. And then, again, we'll hear from Comey tomorrow, who will provide us more information along those lines, handing it right over to Bob Mueller.
Let's bring in McKay Coppins from Washington, D.C. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic and a longtime GOP watcher who wrote a book in 2015 on the future of the Republican Party. He's been focusing on how the Russia investigation is affecting the GOP. And McKay Coppins, good to have you on Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
McKay, what are you most eager to hear and see tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I think that the question you guys have been discussing is one of the central questions, which is, you know, what were the details? What was the substance of the various interactions and conversations Comey had with President Trump as it pertained to the investigation? And does that constitute obstruction? I agree that most likely Comey is not going to go out there and explicitly accuse the president during this testimony of obstructing justice. I think he'll probably say, like, that's not up to me to decide. But I think that the details of his conversations with Trump could be the most explosive revelations that come out of the hearing. And I think that they're going to probably raise more questions than they answer, but certainly propel the investigation forward and make sure that it continues to be a story that kind of dominates the news.
Are you thinking of particular details that he may be talking about his interactions with Trump? What are you thinking of in particular?
Well, we saw reporting, of course, that that Trump urged him to drop the Michael Flynn investigation. I would like to hear Comey actually describe those conversations in detail. We know that from reporting that Comey has taken pretty detailed notes about his various interactions with Trump, and we saw reporting just yesterday in the New York Times saying that Comey actually told Attorney General Sessions not to leave him alone with Donald Trump because of concerns over the things we've been talking about. So, up until this point, all that we've seen is reporting that I think is reliable reporting from great sources, but it's based on mostly anonymous sources, people who are close to Comey, probably his allies and friends, and possibly Comey himself. But we have not seen Comey go on the record and answer questions himself and make these allegations himself. And I think that matters. One of the things that is worth commenting on here is that we've seen, you know, look, these stories always dominate cable news. They always dominate the outlets that we all write for. And I think this story has punctured past the normal kind of D.C. political bubble. But especially tomorrow, we've gotten word that the major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, are going to carry the testimony live. That means if you turn on a TV to one of the major networks in America tomorrow while this hearing is happening, you're probably going to see Comey's face on it talking about his interactions with Trump, being asked pretty tough questions. That's not a good thing for the president. Mm. And I think that Republicans who had hoped the appointment of a special counsel would allow them to kind of get back on track in the meantime with their agenda and hopefully quiet down the investigation for at least a little while are frustrated by how things are playing out. There really is no way to hide from this controversy.
Let's go to Lawrence, who's calling from Winthrop, Maine. Lawrence, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well. What's on your mind?
So I just wanted, I hear you guys talking about how the president doesn't believe there was Russian hacking and everything. And I just want to point out to everybody that the president doesn't actually believe that there wasn't any Russian hacking. The part that he calls a farce, which you guys seem to, you know, turn and strew and misconceive all the time, is that he doesn't believe the whole Russian narrative conspiracy part of it, and he calls that kind of a farce. Yet somehow you guys always seem to turn it to he doesn't believe that Russia somehow interfered. There's hard evidence that Russia was attempting to interfere in our election. Nobody doubts that. It's, you know, it's kind of like the whole Confifi, you know, conspiracy and stuff, and everybody wondered, you know, using the media, using 24-hour news cycle to talk about how retarded our president was, right? And all that said is, despite the negative media's attention, I will stand up. And you know what language it was written in?
Tell me.
Vomit. Crazy, right?
All right. Lawrence, we got the point. Let me put it to my panel. Josh, respond to Lawrence. I mean, there's a concern there that we're putting the emphasis in the wrong place, maybe even hyping this too much.
Well, I just disagree. I mean, I think that first, President Trump does still make statements suggesting that he doesn't think the Russians were behind this. He's gone to great lengths to do that. But, you know, one thing that's important to remember here is this is not about Trump versus Comey. You know, we had a story today saying that yet again that Trump was leaning on Dan Coats, the DNI, to, you know, push back on the FBI investigation. I mean, from his own tweets and other public utterances, Trump himself has taken, you know, several steps in different directions to sort of contain this investigation. And one thing that's very important to note about Comey is it's very clear now that he saw this heading in the direction of a possible obstruction of justice case early on. And he didn't just write notes in a little notebook after meetings. He shared his concerns with top deputies. He shared his notes with people. And he did that for a very specific reason as a you know, FBI official and as a former prosecutor. He knows that the one thing you don't want to do is have it be your word versus somebody else's. So he clearly shared this contemporaneously with a lot of other people. And so those people now can be called as witnesses to corroborate what he was saying at the time. And that's a very powerful way to make a case in criminal court or, you know, for an impeachment or whatever else. So if Trump thinks that he can just discredit Comey, I think he's going to be mistaken.
Mm. But Julie, stick with the caller for a minute and respond to the idea of wall-to-wall 24-hour coverage, certainly on the cable networks. We don't operate that way, but there's no question we spend a lot of time talking about this. Is there respond to that concern that
sure.
If this is inflated, we're talking about it too much?
Well, I feel the caller's frustration, but I would say that, you know, echoing Josh's point, it's not crystal clear that President Trump believes and internalizes that Russia tried to meddle in an American election. And I think that's a serious thing that we should continue to talk about, not only what President Trump is and is not saying, but the actions that he's taking, such as inviting the Russian ambassador into the Oval Office and discussing returning some Russian property in the U.S. To the country.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Relationships are important. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and Blue Apron makes cooking together fun and easy. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. So join in, get the family together, and choose your meals each week. They come to your door with pre-measured ingredients so you can spend time with your family and not at the grocery store. With the simple instructions, everyone can help prepare the meal. There's no risk. Get your first 3 meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. We're getting ready for James Comey's much-anticipated testimony tomorrow before the Senate Intelligence Committee. You can join the conversation. What are your questions about who's involved and how everything is connected? I'm joined by Josh Meyer of Politico, Julie Bykowitz with the Associated Press, and McKay Coppins, a staff writer at The Atlantic. And let's just hear some other voices for a moment. Speaking to reporters in Australia recently, the former director of national intelligence, James Clapper, compared this controversy surrounding the Trump administration to the Watergate scandal that brought down President Nixon. Here's what he said.
I have to say, though, that I think you know, compare the two, that Watergate pales, really, in my view, as compared to what we're confronting now.
A much different view from the Trump sons, Eric and Donald Jr. They told ABC's Tom Lamas on Tuesday that the search to find evidence of collusion with Russia is a witch hunt.
It's the greatest hoax of all time. I was there throughout the campaign. We have no dealings in Russia. We have no projects in Russia. We have nothing to do with Russia.
I mean, to me, it's without a question, you know, reads and smells like a witch hunt.
That was Donald Trump Jr. and before him, his brother, Eric Trump. I want to talk a little bit about how the president is responding. Josh Meyer, let me come to you. One of the things that is being talked about and is possible is that President Trump might actually be live tweeting during tomorrow's hearing. What are you hearing about that and what do you make of that?
Anthony, it's this is long past the point where it's surreal and taken on sort of some Alice in Wonderland sort of proportions. So we have no idea what the president will do. He likes to sort of use his unpredictability in unpredictable ways, but I would bet that he's going to do at least some live tweeting, especially when he feels the need to push back on things. And so, I mean, think about that for a minute. The president of the United States is live tweeting about a congressional hearing that the world is going to be watching, to push back on accusations that he engaged in some possibly impeachable activities. So, I mean, just that alone, the TV ad, all of this, it's just, we will look back on this as a fairly, crazy time in our history, but also a very important time because, the democratic institutions that were created, at the founding of the nation are really being tested here. One quick thing I wanted to sort of add, though, in terms of the Trump sons saying that this is a witch hunt, that seems to be their sort of message these days. Jim Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, if you look up in the dictionary, low key, you'll see his picture. This is not a man who, really gets too hyperbolic about anything. So I think what he was saying when he says this is bigger than Watergate, that's huge. And remember, he also said just about a week ago, when asked about whether the intelligence community, including him, knew about communications between the Russians and White House senior advisor Jared Kushner, he said, I have to say that without specifically affirming or confirming these conversations, that my dashboard warning light was clearly on, and I think that was the case with all of us in the intelligence community. Very concerned about the nature of these approaches to the Russians. So you can't have the DNI saying that and then just dismiss that as a witch hunt. That is a very serious comment that he made, and that needs to be followed up on.
Right, and DNI, of course, Director of National Intelligence. Julie Bykowitz, Josh Meyer used the term, this is bordering on surreal. What are you hearing from the White House about how President Trump will, where will he be tomorrow? What is his demeanor? How do we expect him to be reacting to this during the hearing?
Well, he's absolutely frustrated, and that is there's no question about that. And so knowing that he has a propensity to watch television, particularly when something so high profile is going on, his staff has worked out a way to get him out and about, away from TVs, at least for a little while during the day. He'll be giving a speech just after noon to a conservative group in D.C. Doesn't appear that was something that was long scheduled, but it's a way to get him out into public, get him away from the TV and possibly even away from his mobile phone so that he can't tweet, eat up a couple of hours with that. I know that the White House staff would love to see him take a more measured approach at this really highly sensitive time. There's no doubt that lawyers are also advising him to do that, but he does sort of love to weigh in and love to get his side out. He views Twitter as his direct pipeline to voters, and I think it'll be hard for him to resist, if not live tweeting, at least doing some sort of summary tweets at the end of the day when he's watching recaps of the Comey hearing.
And McKay Cobbins, comment if you would, what does this do to the process? I mean, Josh brought this up really eloquently. I mean, here we have, part of the Democratic system sort of working here or trying to work, and as it unfolds, The president might well be on the sidelines, interjecting his opinions, pushing back as it happens. I mean, what does that mean? Yeah. What does that say do to the process?
Well, I think it's troubling. I mean, you know, this actually would not be the first time, believe it or not, that a presidential Twitter feed was being used to live tweet a James Comey testimony. Back in March, James Comey testified on Capitol Hill, and not Donald Trump's personal Twitter feed, but actually the official presidential Twitter feed was live tweeting throughout the hearing, trying to rebut various points that were made, and in some cases, tweeting outright falsehoods or mischaracterizations of what Comey was saying. And to me, I remember at the time I wrote a piece for The Atlantic about how just surreal that was. And just to give it some perspective, I mean, the official Twitter feed of the president run by the executive branch is something akin to state-run media. And to have a state-run media outlet basically advancing falsehoods to interfere with or at least muddy the waters as Congress is trying to do its job in investigating, that's something that should trouble people regardless of their party affiliation. This isn't a partisan statement. This is, you know, these are basic norms of our democratic institutions that we're trying to protect here. And I think that we need to be thinking about how to respond in ways that are not just partisan to this. I'm very troubled by it, and I think a lot of Republicans are as well. One other quick point I'd make is that Trump, there was a lot of talk over the last couple of weeks about the White House setting up a war room to respond to this scandal, to kind of contain the Russia scandal. There would be specific people devoted to responding to it so that the rest of the administration could focus on advancing the agenda. We saw reporting just this week in Axios and other places that effort has basically collapsed. And one of the reasons is that they couldn't attract the kind of Republican talent in both communications and in legal work that they needed to make that work. And I can tell you from my conversations with a lot of Republican operatives here in Washington, they just are – the Trump administration is becoming so toxic already that a lot of them don't want to be involved because it's almost radioactive. They don't want to have their careers ruined by it.
We've got listeners commenting on our Facebook page. Here's Robert Durso, who writes, all we want is the truth and justice. Matt MC writes, help us, Obi-Wan Comey. You're our only hope. And here's AC, who writes, it seems like there's too much hope in what he'll say, and I don't think he's so unprofessional he'll foolishly do something he knows is controversial. He already learned his lesson last year that it's not worth it. AC there referring to the fact that I guess the lesson is he was fired. Let's go to some calls. Tony is calling from Middletown, Delaware. Tony, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hello, Anthony. It seems like, you know, the reporting on this, you know, it seems like the reporters would do better off or be better served reporting on a goat rodeo than anything else because, I mean, you get such biased hackery coming from, you know, so many angles. It's pretty disheartening and disgusting. But as far as Comey's concerned, the man is already on record. I mean, he's already been before, so he's going to have to be very careful that he doesn't perjure himself. So you're not going to – I mean, what else are you going to get? Oh, he took some copious notes. Big deal. I mean, he could be making up notes right now. So whatever he said initially is what's going to be going down tomorrow. There's no collusion. That's what everyone's been saying. So it's just some partisan hackery that, you know, they're just trying to pin some – you know, they're just trying to take the man down because they hate him. And then if people can't see that logic, then woe to America because, you know, we're just becoming a bunch of – Democrat and Republican partisans, and logic just is gone. So.
Well, Tony, I appreciate where you're coming from. We've been trying to talk about some pretty serious issues in this hour that raise some questions about, you know, some serious investigations, some serious allegations. And I think a lot of people want to get to the bottom of it. But let me pick up your point about the tight line that James Comey is going to have to walk tomorrow. Josh Meyer, respond to that point that the caller was making. That is, he is on record of saying a lot. He's going to be under oath tomorrow. What risks does he face? How careful a line does he have to walk?
Well, Anthony, I think the biggest excuse me, the biggest risk he faces is sort of overtaking the the criminal investigation that Special Counsel Mueller is leading. But you know, he's very seasoned as a prosecutor. He's very smart. I think he's going to be able to sort of thread the needle and present some very compelling testimony without straying too far into that airspace. But you know, regarding what the caller said, It saddens me when so many people say that the journalism is partisan hackery. There are some really, really good and very careful and deliberate reporting that's been done, reporters doing work on this. And, I think we're just trying to get the facts. We're trying to get, figure out what happened, put it in the proper context, and let the American public decide. And I think that, you know, it's too early to say that nothing happened, and it's too early to say that something did happen. We need to figure out, what happened by letting the investigators do their job and have it be unimpeded by the Attorney General's office or the White House or anybody else. So, you know, let's wait and see what Mueller comes up with. He's a very thorough and aggressive investigator, and he's hopefully going to get to the bottom of this. But let's wait and see what he finds.
Yeah, I mean, I'd back that up. I mean, in response to the charge about this being all about journalistic hackery, earlier in the hour we heard from Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins, who has some pretty serious questions that she's like the answers to. So it's not only journalistic hacks that want to sort of understand what's going on. But let's take a couple more calls. Michelle is calling from Kent, Ohio. Michelle, you're on the air. Good to have you.
Hi, Anthony.
Hi there. What's on your mind?
Well, I was noticing this morning that there are some ads coming out that seem to be coming kind of from the Republican side that look an awful lot like attack ads. And there's no election going on. Comey, in this case, is essentially a witness. Is there a precedent for that kind of thing going on? Is this what we can expect from politics in the future, that we, you know, take out people who are testifying by Congress by smearing them in ads?
Michelle, it's a good question. We did talk about the ads, but Julie Bykowitz, respond to Michelle. I mean, how do we – I'm not sure I know the answer to that. Is this unprecedented that a political party actually takes out an attack ad in advance of congressional testimony? I can't recall that happening.
I can't recall it happening, but I think that it's a little bit of a harbinger of what we may see more of in the future, unfortunately, for people who dislike these types of ads. And I'll just point out that this is one of those groups that everyone loves to hate. It's a nonprofit, so it doesn't have to disclose its donors. It's an issues group, and they've taken on this defending of the president as an issue. They just have to keep their overtly sort of political work to a minimum. But this they kind of characterize as an issue, which allows them to do things in a much more flexible way than a traditional campaign candidate or a super PAC even. And you're just, you know, I can recall a couple of times during this previous election where similar types of ads were taken out about high-profile donors. So you would see what looks like an attack ad on a donor, and it just seems to be this attack theme seems to be spreading into other parts of politics, not just the people who are running for office. It's interesting, and I think a lot of people would find it disturbing.
Let's take another call. Hugh is calling us from Jacksonville, North Carolina. Hugh, you're on the air.
Hey, Anthony. I appreciate you taking my call. The truth is I don't like Trump. I didn't vote for him. I voted for the guy who didn't know where Aleppo was. But I do, I want the truth to come out, and I don't see any fire yet, and I think it could be a witch hunt. That's it.
All right, you want the truth to come out. You see some smoke there, but maybe not the fire. McKay Coppins, what do you expect tomorrow? I mean, respond to the caller. He makes the point that there is no fire yet. There certainly is a lot of smoke, but respond to the caller.
Well, he's not wrong. When we're talking about the core of this issue, the question is, did the Trump campaign collude with Russia in order to interfere a U.S. presidential election? The answer to that is yes. That's obviously a huge deal, and that's one of the reasons that it's gotten so much media attention. These things don't generally come out. The answers don't come out unless a lot of different people, including congressional investigators, law enforcement investigators, and the press, an independent press, look into them. That said, I understand the frustration. I hear this more and more from Republicans who say, look, you know, these are important questions, but when we automatically jump to constant Watergate comparisons, and when we're talking about impeachment before all the facts have come out, and when we're kind of breathlessly reporting every detail as though it's a world-ending bombshell, it can lead to skepticism, certainly among Trump supporters, and even among some who are kind of on the fence, who will say, you know, this all seems a little bit hysterical. That said, I think I agree with what others have said, that there's been a lot of good reporting about this, and it needs to continue. And so I hope we don't back down just because some people are kind of queasy about it.
All right. So some very understandable skepticism. Also a need to ask some questions. We'll probably get some answers tomorrow. McKay Coppin, staff writer for The Atlantic magazine. He's a longtime GOP watcher and wrote the 2015 book, The Wilderness, about the future of the Republican Party. McKay, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
And Josh Meyer, senior investigative reporter for Politico. Thank you as well.
My pleasure.
Julie Bykowitz, White House reporter for the Associated Press. Great pleasure having you today. Thank you for participating.
Thanks a lot.
That's it for today. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.